great week.
This is the VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Ukraine's president says Russia's rush to mobilize hundreds of thousands of recruits to staunch stinging losses is a tacit acknowledgement that its army is not able to fight. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky also told CBS he's bracing for more Russian strikes on Ukraine's electrical infrastructure. As the weather gets colder, he says this winter will be very difficult. Although the European Union is now largely off limits to most Russians, with direct flights stopped, an exodus of Russians fleeing military service is dividing European opinion over whether they should be granted safe haven. Officials in the Baltic say the Russians have had plenty of time to protest the war but did not. The partial mobilization is also triggering more protest in Russia. Typhoon Nuru has now blown out of northern Philippines and left at least five rescuers dead, caused floods and power outages and forced officials to suspend classes and government to work in the capital and outlying provinces. The most powerful typhoon to hit the country this year slammed into a province before nightfall Sunday, then weakened as it barreled overnight across the main Luzon region. Thousands of people were moved to emergency shelters, some forcibly, ahead of the storm. North Korea fired a short-range ballistic missile toward its eastern seas, extending a provocative streak in weapons testing. And as a U.S. aircraft carrier visits South Korea for joint military exercises in response to North's growing nuclear threat, South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff said the missile launched from the western inland town of Taishan flew about 600 kilometers across country on a maximum altitude of 60 kilometers. This is VOA News. The Mexican Army's role in the disappearance of 43 college students and its alleged links to organized crime are now at the center of a case that has shaken the nation. The government's Truth Commission has declared the 2014 episode a state crime. Three members of the military and former federal attorney general have been arrested in that case. Few now believe the government's initial claim, putting all blame on a drug gang and allied local officials for killing the students and burning their bodies. A recent report indicates collaboration between a drug cartel and an officer, and that some of the students' bodies were taken to a local army base. Pope Francis has traveled to southern Italy to close out an Italian church congress that coincided with Italy's national election. Neither Francis nor his host referred to the vote during the open-air mass, though Francis mentioned immigration and Italy's low birth rate and comments after hitting on two campaign issues. Italy's bishops' conference had earlier urged Italians to cast ballots in the eagerly watched election that could bring Italy its first far-right government since World War II. Tesla CEO Elon Musk will spend Monday and Tuesday with lawyers for Twitter answering questions ahead of an October trial that will determine whether he must fork over the $44 billion he agreed to pay for the social platform before attempting to back out of the deal. The deposition planned for Monday, Tuesday, and a possible extension on Wednesday will not be public, and as of Sunday evening, it was not clear whether Musk will appear in person or via video. The trial is set to begin October 17th in Delaware's Chancery Court, and it is scheduled to last at least 5 days. Fiona washed houses into the sea, tore the roofs off others, and knocked out power to the vast majority of two Canadian provinces as it made landfall as a big, powerful post-tropical cyclone on Saturday. Fiona transformed from a hurricane into a post-tropical storm late Friday, but it still had hurricane-strength winds and brought drenching rains and huge waves as it hit Nova Scotia. There was no confirmation of fatalities or injuries. Ocean waves pounded the town of Chenalport-le-Bosque on the southern coast of Newfoundland, where entire structures were washed into the sea. Fiona has weakened to tropical strength as it moves across the Gulf of St. Lawrence. And recapping our top story, Ukraine's president says Russia's rush to mobilize hundreds of thousands of recruits to staunch stinging losses is a tacit acknowledgement that its army is not able to fight. The Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, also told CBS he's bracing for more Russian strikes on Ukraine's electrical infrastructure.
Monday, September 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, tensions as North Korea fires ballistic missiles ahead of U.S. Vice President's visit.
South Korea's military said it was a single short-range ballistic missile fired from near the Taechon area of North Pyongan province just before 7 a.m. local time.
Russia pledges protection for annexed Ukrainian territories as the West and Kyiv calls ongoing referendum a sham.
Residents of Russian-held parts of Ukraine cast ballots on Sunday on whether they wanted to join the Russian Federation. The third day of polling, Ukraine and the West have called the votes a sham effort to illegally acquire territory.
And hundreds of foreign dignitaries are expected at state funeral for former Japanese Prime Minister. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Tokyo and Seoul have denounced Pyongyang for threatening peace in the region. This after North Korea fired a ballistic missile off its coast early on Sunday, ahead of joint U.S.-South Korea military drills and a visit to the region by U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris. Diane To of Reuters reports.
South Korea's military said it was a single short-range ballistic missile fired from near the Taechon area of North Pyongan province just before 7 a.m. local time. Seoul called the launch an act of grave provocation and held an emergency National Security Council meeting to discuss response measures. Japan's defense minister Yasukazu Hamada told reporters, including cruise missiles, this was the North's 19th launch this year. He said Pyongyang's missile testing is taking place at an unprecedented pace, adding, quote, to do this as a Ukraine invasion unfolds is unforgivable. The last time North Korea carried out such a launch was in early June, when it fired 8 short-range ballistic missiles in one day. South Korea's Yonhap News Agency reported on Saturday that the North may also be preparing to test a submarine-launched ballistic missile, citing the South's military.
That's Diane So of Reuters. Russia has sought to defend its 7-month-old war at the United Nations with Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, saying that regions of Ukraine where widely held derided referendums are being held would be under Russia's, quote, full protection, unquote, if annexed by Moscow. Zakhary Goldman of Reuters reports.
This was Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov's response when asked if Russia would have grounds for using nuclear weapons to defend annexed regions of Ukraine.
The entire territory of the Russian Federation, which is enshrined and could be further enshrined in the constitution of the Russian Federation, unquestionably is under the full protection of the state. That is absolutely natural, and all of the laws, doctrines, concepts, and strategies of the Russian Federation apply to all of its territory.
Russia calls its actions in Ukraine a special military operation aimed at demilitarizing its neighbor and removing what it calls dangerous nationalists in Kyiv. And residents of Russian-held parts of Ukraine cast ballots on Sunday on whether they wanted to join the Russian Federation, the third day of polling. Ukraine and the West have called the votes a sham effort to illegally acquire territory conquered by Russia since the start of its invasion in February. Kyiv and its Western allies fear that Moscow could portray acts to retake the territories and reunify the country as an attack on Russia itself. In Russian-occupied Mariupol, some voters see the referendum as necessary. The annexation efforts come after Russia faced significant strategic setbacks on the battlefield. Russian soldiers beat a hasty and humiliating retreat in the face of a Ukrainian counteroffensive in the northeast part of the country, abandoning hardware and weapons as they fled. Those losses may have prompted President Vladimir Putin to last week order Russia's first military mobilization since World War II. That move triggered protests across Russia and sent many men of military age fleeing. The territory controlled by Russia or Russian-backed forces represents about 15% of Ukrainian territory. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was adamant on Saturday that his country would regain all the territory Russia had taken.
That's Zakhary Goldman of Reuters. The United Nations reports the human rights situation in Belarus has seriously deteriorated as the government seeks to maintain control over its people, stripping them of their civil and political rights. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA on the situation, described in a report which was submitted to the UN Human Rights Council.
The report finds the climate of repression continues throughout Belarus 2 years after Alexander Lukashenko was re-elected for a sixth term as president in a widely contested election. The anger that sparked large-scale protests at that time has not mitigated. Since her office's last update in March, Acting High Commissioner for Human Rights Nada Al-Nashif says there's been a massive crackdown on civil society. She says the media, political opponents, trade unions, and other perceived dissidents have been prevented from exercising their democratic and human rights. She says more than 1,300 political prisoners currently are behind bars. She notes authorities continue imprisoning and torturing people for exercising their human rights, including their rights to freedom of expression and peaceful assembly.
No genuine and impartial investigations into allegations of torture and cases of death are being conducted. On the contrary, we continue to receive credible reports of authorities harassing and intimidating those seeking justice in relation to such allegations, including relatives of victims, further undermining the rule of law and the judicial system.
Al-Nashif expresses particular concern about amendments to the criminal code. She says they extend the death penalty to people attempting to carry out so-called acts of terrorism and murders of government officials or public figures. She notes dozens of political activists already have been charged with these crimes.
Tens of thousands of people have been forced to flee to neighboring countries. The crackdown's human rights impact, particularly on women, children, and persons with disabilities, are of specific concern. There are also reports of seizures of assets and unlawful evictions of relatives of those who left the country.
In response, Belarus ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Larisa Belskaya, said the report was far removed from reality and deliberately distorted the situation in her country. She accused the authors of the report of double standards. Instead of vilifying the elections in her country, she said the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights should investigate the presidential elections that took place in the United States and issue similar reports. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi is insisting the government must react firmly to the widespread protests across the country over the death of a young Kurdish woman, Mahsa Amini, at the hands of the regime's morality police. Demonstrations have spread to at least 133 cities in the country. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Video on social media showed protesters torching a statue of Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei in his hometown of Mashhad Friday as they chanted slogans against him and the government. Other videos showed protesters in multiple cities, including the capital Tehran, setting fire to Khamenei's portrait. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi, who returned several days ago from a trip to the United Nations in New York, was reported by Iranian media to have told the family of a regime supporter killed in the protests that the government must react decisively against the protests. General Aziz Allah Maliki, who is the police chief of Gilan province, a hotbed of the current protests, told government media that security forces in his province are on the verge of collapse. More than 700 people reportedly were arrested for protesting in Gilan. Protesters reportedly took control of large parts of the mostly Kurdish town of Aznavia in the northwest of the country after security forces were overwhelmed by the large numbers of protesters. Video on social media also showed violent clashes between protesters and government security forces and the volunteer pro-government Basij militia group in the district of Satarkand in the capital of Tehran. Iran analyst Ali Nourizadeh tells VOA that women have joined their husbands, sons, and brothers to protest in the streets, while students also have joined the protests in large numbers, despite the heavy-handed regime crackdown on student protesters during demonstrations last year and in 2018. Nourizadeh says that unlike the protests of 2009, 2018, and last year, there is no single demand being made by protesters other than the downfall of Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei and his regime. Nourizadeh says he suspects that recent reports about Supreme Leader Khamenei being in bad health may have added to the anger of the people who don't want Khamenei's son Mujtaba to succeed him. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Hundreds of foreign dignitaries are attending Tuesday's state funeral for former Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. It's a reflection of the Japanese leader's immense popularity abroad, but Abe, who was assassinated in July, leaves a more divided legacy at home, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Tokyo.
To many world leaders, Shinzo Abe was a reliable friend who supported the rules-based global order. His shocking death brought an outpouring of overseas tributes. But in Japan, Abe's legacy is more complicated. To see how that's the case, look no further than the public backlash against his state funeral being held Tuesday. Polls show a large majority of Japanese oppose the event. In Tokyo's Shibuya neighborhood, those mixed feelings about Abe are on display. Mrs. Sasaki, a Tokyo resident, says she admires Abe's legacy, but says she doesn't understand why the government would spend so much money on the event. Another Tokyo resident, Mario Ito, says 70% of Japanese oppose the funeral. The fact it's being held anyway suggests the government is dysfunctional, he says. Although Abe won respect for making his country stronger and more stable, his conservative policies angered many. Mr. Joe, who is walking in central Tokyo, says Abe's policies have left Japan in an economic crisis. He also criticized Abe for cutting corners to pass some of his key legislation. Abe was Japan's longest-serving prime minister, but by the time he left office in 2020, his popularity had plummeted, says Japan politics expert Jeffrey Hall.
As a prime minister, he was successful in winning elections with his party again and again, but those elections had quite a low turnout. So even though he was winning elections, didn't mean that he was a very, very popular politician or loved by the people.
Part of the backlash has to do with Abe's ties to the controversial South Korea-based Unification Church. Abe's suspected killer said the group took excessive donations from his mother, and he accused Abe of supporting the church.
You can't really separate this funeral and Abe's legacy from the Unification Church scandal because as the party is revealed to have more and more ties to this church, most of these people were close associates of Abe, many of them within his own faction of the party.
It has created a tricky situation for Prime Minister Fumio Kishida, an Abe protege. His approval rating has sunk to new lows. But for the world leaders gathered in Tokyo this week, the state funeral will be an occasion to say goodbye to one of the 21st century's most influential leaders. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Tokyo.
In other news, a powerful typhoon has slammed into the northeastern Philippines and is barreling across the main Luzon island towards the capital in a densely populated path where thousands have been evacuated to safety. Typhoon Noru hit the coastal town of Baguio on Polillo Island shortly before nightfall Sunday. With sustained winds of 121 miles per hour and strong gusts, forecasters say it's expected to weaken slightly when it hits mountains but will remain dangerously ferocious. Thousands of villagers were evacuated, some forcibly, from the typhoon's path, as well as from mountainside villages prone to landslides and flash floods. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Marine authorities will scale down their efforts to free whales involved in a mass stranding on the island state of Tasmania in Australia. Experts have said the island has become a, quote, hotbed, unquote, for beached whales, although they don't know why. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
About 200 whales have died at Ocean Beach near Macquarie Harbour, south of Strawn, on the west coast of Tasmania. The large pod of pilot whales was found beached on Wednesday. A small number of whales have been seen swimming nearby, but some are stranded in shallow waters. 2 years ago, 470 pilot whales ran aground on sandbars in the same area. Most died, although rescuers did manage to save just over 100 in Australia's worst whale stranding. Scientists aren't sure why Tasmania is a whale trap. There are various theories. It could be that the leader of the pod gets lost or frightened. Changes to the Earth's magnetic properties or warmer ocean temperatures that move the whale's traditional sources of food could also be to blame. Other experts have suggested that Tasmania, which is about 68,000 square kilometres, could just be a giant navigational hazard for animals that use echolocation or reflected sound for navigation. Wildlife scientist Vanessa Perotta says mass whale beachings are a mystery.
Pilot whales are highly social animals. These animals also, like any other whale, are susceptible to stranding. Now, we don't know why strandings happen. There could be several theories. So one could be their misnavigation. The fact that we've seen similar species at the same time and the same location reoccurring in terms of stranding in that same spot might provide some sort of indication that there might be something environmental here.
Efforts to remove about 200 whales that died near Macquarie Harbour, south of Strawn in Tasmania, are continuing Sunday. Crews plan to tow the carcasses out to sea and release them in deep water. Earlier this week, more than a dozen sperm whales died and washed ashore on King Island, north of Tasmania. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Thank you, Phil. Artificial intelligence can be a tool for creating digital artwork, but technology doesn't typically assume the role of artists. One AI software program is garnering attention for its ability to generate art from seemingly random text-based queries. Tina Trent reports.
From an astronaut riding a horse to a Shiba Inu dog wearing a beret, the possibilities are seemingly endless with DALL-E 2. It's the latest iteration of an artificial intelligence-based image generator by San Francisco tech company OpenAI. The neural network is trained on hundreds of millions of images paired with captions and can translate virtually any text prompt into a relevant image, even seemingly random prompts. A sea otter in the style of Girl with a Pearl Earring by Johannes Vermeer. 19-year-old Alon Brainis is one of only a million users who've had a chance to play with DALL-E.
I mean, I don't think anyone thinks it's going to, like, replace, like, real artists in, like, graphic design, but I think it'll more be like a tool for artists to, like, streamline their creative process.
University of California Berkeley professor and digital forensics researcher Hani Farid has tested DALL-E 2 and is equally impressed.
My first impression was I was completely blown away.
Still, Farid discovered that DALL-E 2 doesn't always get it right when it comes to perspective. Like these images produced from the prompt, three cubes on a sidewalk photographed on a sunny day.
This is a complete failure. It just put the shadows in the wrong place.
These and other inconsistencies are clues, Farid says, that can help researchers like him determine whether an image is real or fake. But as systems become more advanced, it'll get harder to tell differences. Farid says the scale of the output will be a challenge to stay on top of.
We're not dealing with a couple of images a week, a couple of images a year or month. We're dealing with thousands of images every hour that can now be synthesized and distributed and distorting reality.
For now, DALL-E 2 is pushing the boundaries of art imitating life. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA's Mars lander InSight has been gathering data about the deep interior of the red planet since it touched down in November 2018. One of the lander's instruments is a seismometer, which senses various surface noises caused by earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, and meteor strikes. NASA's InSight team says the lander has detected vibrations caused by four separate meteoroid impacts in 2020 and 2021. The space agency used data from InSight to create what such an impact sounds like. According to a recently published study, the impacts took place between 85 and 290 kilometers from InSight's location. NASA says it's the first time seismic and acoustic waves from an impact have been observed on Mars. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
An editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Elections are a cornerstone of the democratic system of government. Attempts to target the U.S. electoral system are an attack on the United States' democratic values. It is therefore no surprise that the U.S. government takes any attempt to undermine or manipulate the American electoral system seriously. The Russian Federation has demonstrated determination in its attempts to undermine the democratic processes and institutions essential to the functioning of our democracy and that of other countries, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken. In response, the United States is sanctioning two individuals and four entities that support the Kremlin's global malign influence operations and election interference activities. Alexander Viktorovich Yanov, president and founder of the anti-globalization movement of Russia, uses his position and various companies to promote Russia's disinformation agenda and has worked with Russia's intelligence services to support organizations they believed would create socio-political disturbances in the United States. He is also the president and owner of Yanov Transcontinental and Domain Registrant of the website Stop Imperialism. Yanov was designated pursuant to Executive Order 14024 for having acted for or on behalf of the government of the Russian Federation. At the same time, the anti-globalization movement of Russia and Yanov Transcontinental were designated under Executive Order 14024 for being owned or controlled by Yanov. Stop Imperialism was also designated under Executive Order 14024 for having acted on behalf of Yanov. Natalia Valerievna Borlinova is the founder and president of the Center for Support and Development of Public Initiative Creative Diplomacy, also known as Pikriti or Creative Diplomacy. Both Borlinova and Pikriti are directly funded and directed by Russia's intelligence services, which also track the career paths and positions of participants in Pikriti-sponsored events. Borlinova was designated pursuant to Executive Order 14024 for having acted on behalf of the government of the Russian Federation. Pakriti was designated pursuant to Executive Order 14024 for having acted on behalf of the government of the Russian Federation and for being owned by Borlinova. The Kremlin has repeatedly sought to threaten and undermine our democratic processes and institutions, said Undersecretary of the Treasury for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence Brian Nelson. The United States will continue our extensive work to counter these efforts and safeguard our democracy from Russia's interference.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.